Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you guys here today. I do have a guest with me today, which is a new thing I'm adding into this season. And I'm bringing on guests because I really want you guys to hear other people's stories. I want you to know and bring on proof and evidence that you're not alone. And when we're going through this struggling with the drinking, over drinking, and then shaming ourselves and regretting our actions, we can sometimes feel like we're the only one experiencing this, especially if in how we socialize in our social group, nobody else is talking about it out loud, even though maybe my hunch is some of them may be feeling some of the same things you are, but they're not quite comfortable sharing it out loud either. Welcome to Exit the Drinking Life podcast. I'm thrilled that you're here. I'm your host, Debbie Tauber, creator of the Exit Methodology, advocate for living your best and most intentional life, and alcohol freedom coach. This podcast is for you if you have big dreams and aspirations, but you've begun to notice that just maybe your current drinking patterns are getting in the way. Inside the podcast, we'll dive into a modern day approach that can help you move away from shame and blame when it comes to what you're drinking and finally take the driver's seat of your life again. It's time to exit the drinking life. What I want to do is bring on guests. So I have a guest with me today. Her name is Gail, and she is actually from the other side of the world than I am. So I'm over here in the United States and she's over in Australia. And so she has graciously volunteered to come early in the morning for her and to share her story. So I'm going to let her introduce herself to you and then a little bit about what led her to deciding that it was time for her to rethink alcohol in her life. So Gail, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your beginning.
Okay, thank you. So thanks for having me, everybody. It's really a pleasure to be here. One of the main reasons I wanted to be involved in this guest program with Debbie is because it really helped me when I decided to give up alcohol, hearing from other people. So with that in mind, I want to share just a little bit of, I suppose, my drinking story, because you can't share an exit story without first sharing the story about how you got to that point. So for me, I always considered myself to be a fairly normal drinker, let's say. I didn't really drink until I turned 18. And in Australia, it's legal to drink when you turn 18. So it was only just before I turned 18 that I started drinking at all, which is when I finished high school. And throughout my early 20s or into my mid-20s, I thought that I was a fairly normal drinker. So as a routine thing, I would go with my friend group and we would go out clubbing or go to bars and at least once a week drink to excess, usually a Saturday night. And that would mean then that Sunday was spent obviously being hungover and not being at all productive, you know, lying around on the couch recovering and just hoping that you were going to be well enough to go to work the next day. When I look back now, I can see that there actually were some red flags there, that some of that approach to drinking, even at that time, was not a normal approach. And there are certain things that I've heard since that I reflect back on now and I think, oh, that might have been a red flag for me to stop drinking at that time. But in Australia, as in many other cultures, that idea of this binge drinking, this going out and partying on the weekends was very accepted. But at that time, I didn't drink during the week at all. And it was usually only the Friday and the Saturday night. But it was in such quantities that it was actually having, I now know, quite a detrimental impact on me and my emotional and mental well-being, if not just my physical well-being. So fast forward a little bit, I had my kids when I was in my late 20s, so 28 and 29, they were born. And I guess when I was at home with them, a glass of wine every evening started to become part of my normal routine because I was, you know, at home with two young children. I wasn't out in the workplace. And so it became a way, I suppose, in my mind of rewarding myself. And that sounds really awful because I didn't need to reward myself for being at home with my beautiful little kids. I really enjoyed that part of my life, but I still felt like I needed that connection with something that was adult and sophisticated. And so for me, pouring a glass of wine in the evening became the representation of that kind of mindset. So fast forward again a little bit. So it was all sort of within fairly normal range at that point. Although, again, when I look back, I can see certain events and things that happened. And I think now that was a red flag. If I was paying attention, I would have been able to see, you know, this is becoming a problem and certain things that happened that I'm really not very proud of. But at the time, I didn't question them. I just kind of accepted that, oh, that's okay. You know, that you had a few too many drinks that night. That's okay. And of course it wasn't. So anyway, fast forward a little bit further. In 2016, I actually separated from my husband. And so leading up to that separation, things were obviously not great. And I wasn't coping very well with that part of my life. And so that, you know, glass or two of wine at night became a bottle of wine a night. And so my then husband would go up to bed quite early. My kids would go to bed and I would just sit and drink red wine nearly every night, and then still somehow managed to get up and go to work. And I have a fairly high level professional role in a university, so I'd still manage to get up and go to work and be functional at work. And I really now I can't imagine how I got anything done with that kind of alcoholic fog, or the fog of alcohol, I should say, that I know now I was in. And I only know that now because I'm not in that fog anymore. So you have to step out of it. You know, it's like being in a mist. You don't actually know how thick the mist is because you're standing in it. It's not until you step back and could see it from a distance that you go, oh, wow, that was a really thick mist. So anyway, when the divorce actually happened, you know, if you thought a bottle of wine a night, well, that's a lot. It actually escalated again. And in that first year after I separated, I was drinking probably two bottles a night, now every night of the week. So that is a substantial amount of alcohol. And I met my new partner within that year. And, you know, and he was amazing with trying to help me get on top of my alcohol consumption. And he's a normal drinker. So I don't think it really occurred to him, and it certainly didn't occur to me, that moderating just wasn't going to be possible for me. So he would say, you know, you just need to moderate, you just need to drink a little bit less. And I just couldn't. You know, if I had one glass, I had one bottle. It just, that's how it went. And it was my way of coping through a very, very stressful time. But of course, I came through that stressful time, things started to calm down, but the alcohol stayed. So I had then developed such a habit and such a dysfunctional reliance on alcohol that even when things were then happier and normal and we set up a new household and, you know, everybody got through that traumatic time, I kept drinking. And so it was every night. I did give up red wine because I'd obviously overdone the red wine, but I shifted to white wine and I shifted to champagne. And so every night of the week, part of my routine was, okay, I'm home, I can have a drink. At the time, my daughter was dancing nearly every night of the week. And so, you know, there were obviously times when I would need to go out and drive to pick her up at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And so during that time, I was always doing those mental calculations. How many glasses of wine can I have before I need to go out and drive? Can I fit in two glasses of wine before I drive? And, you know, if for whatever reason I wasn't picking her up, I would arrive home from work and my mindset would be, oh, yay, I get to drink with abandon. And I had this and I would think that often to myself. So that was just me giving myself permission to drink as much as I wanted. You don't have to drive. You're home now. All good. Drink whatever you want. And of course, that's incredibly dysfunctional. So the change came, I suppose, when I realized, and it's not that I didn't realize this. Of course, you realize that when you're drinking so much, you don't handle any conflict very well. So when I was drinking that much, small tensions that would arise with either the kids or with Steve, I would know that I wasn't going to handle it very well because I'd had some drinks. But at the same time, I never wanted to blame the alcohol for it. It was like, oh, it's not the alcohol. It's just that this has happened or that's happened and that's what's upsetting me. And so I then had to shift my thinking, I suppose, to what might it be without alcohol? And that change came on a Sunday night, so just a normal night. I'd been drinking with abandon, as I do. There was some conflict in the house, and I would always leave. I would always take myself away, not without lots of shouting and carrying on first. But I found myself, you know, down the road at about 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of winter, very poorly dressed for it. So it was absolutely freezing. And that was my wake-up call. So that was, what am I doing here? You know, I've got, so it was a year ago, so a 16-year-old and a 15-year-old at home. I've got my partner at home. Why am I down the street at 2 o'clock in the morning dressed in winter, dressed in a singlet top and a little pair of shorts? And that was the 3rd of August last year, and that was the last day I had a drink. And so it was just this catalyst, I suppose, of realizing that the conflict was always going to keep happening if I didn't do something about how much I was drinking. And that's not to say that conflict doesn't still occur, because of course it does. That's part of human interaction. But I can handle it much better now, and it doesn't arise as often. It's, you know, things are far more settled because I have such a different mindset, and I'm able to see the role that alcohol was playing in all of that. And not to mention, I was still drinking towards the end, usually lower alcohol. So I tried to find the alcohol, reduced alcohol bottles of wine or reduced alcohol bottles of champagne. But when you drink two of them, it's still a lot of alcohol.
Right, yeah.
And so the other thing for me is realizing the impact that was having on my work. So I've honestly achieved more in my work in the last year than I had in the previous 5 years put together. So, you know, you just get this absolute change in your energy levels and your productivity and how you approach things and how motivated you are to, you know, to actually do some really good and interesting things with real outcomes. And you can do them in a way where your mind is much clearer and you can achieve much better without the alcohol.
Yeah, but I think, but your story sounds very, very similar to kind of like mine, because I started when I was 18 also, because at the time here in the States, you could at the time. Yeah. In the back when I was 18, and it gradually built up over time. And it was also a divorce. And then also then thinking about how I had not prepared myself for my retirement years. So then I was trying to cope with that. And was I going to have to totally work forever? And so my hunch is that there's a lot of people listening that the gradual buildup of it, and then also the normalization of but this is part of life. This is part of what alcohol belongs in life, right? Yeah. Even though we now know that those that we're not drinking it, that it's actually an addictive substance to the human body, right? And I think probably people might be aware of that, but yet it's not put out there that much. And because it's socially, it's okay to go to somebody's house and pour a glass of wine, but it's not okay to go to somebody's house and get out all of your paraphernalia for shooting a drug into your body, right? Into your arm or whatever. That's just not socially okay, even though both substances are addictive to the human body.
And I think there can be a real struggle with that, because it is so accepted. We see it all the time. You know, early on when I stopped drinking, we were watching a program called 800 Words, which is Australian actors and New Zealand actors. So I don't know if you'll get it over there in the States. But it was really interesting to me, because we started watching this series while I was drinking, and I never really paid that much attention to how much wine they would be drinking during the show. And then after I stopped drinking, I would notice that nearly in every single episode there was something where they would go to the bar, they would have a glass of wine, they would have a beer, they would be drunk. It was it was part of the show. And these were adults in a normal functioning little community set in New Zealand. And it really was amazing to me. In one particular episode, I remember I'd actually did some journaling about this one, that there were three occasions in this short episode where alcohol was a huge feature of how they were socializing with each other, including the younger people in the show as well as the, you know, the older adults. And so that was, it was, it's really that societal acceptance that you go to, you go out to see your friends, you're going to have a drink, or you invite people around. You've got, you know, you've got the wine on ice, you've got the beer on ice ready to share with your friends. It's just part of what we accept. I do have to say, though, it was funny, one episode, they bought a bottle of wine and there were three friends getting together and they just bought this one bottle of wine. And I remember thinking, oh, that's not enough.
Yeah.
One bottle of wine for three people.
Right. That's just going to be mine. I don't know what these other two people are going to drink.
Exactly, right?
I would
have taken two at least just for me. So, you know, so it was funny that in the way that I perceived that. And the other one that I've noticed really recently is during the Olympics even, people would ask, you know, some of the journalists when they were asking people who'd just won gold or speaking with the families of people who'd just won gold, and they would ask about, you know, is he going to crack open a stubby when he gets home, or is he, you know, have you got the champagne on ice ready to celebrate? And so it's this constant expectation that alcohol is going to be part of the way we celebrate things that happen in our lives. You know, we were gifted a huge magnum of champagne just recently after, you know, a purchase that we'd made. And I thought, well, that's lovely, but, you know, it's no good for me. So it's this accepted thing that alcohol is always going to be part of these celebrations and functions and all of those things. And the other part I just want to pick up on what you said is that idea of the difference in perception between alcohol use and drug use. And yeah. I think because it is so accepted and normalized in our society, people can't understand, or some people who have a normal relationship with alcohol don't necessarily understand what it can be like to have a dysfunctional relationship with alcohol. So for some people, it really is as easy as saying, why don't you just moderate? Why don't you just drink less? You know, don't drink the bottle, just have one or two glasses. And for them, that's a really easy thing for them to do because they have a normal relationship. But if you don't, the idea of just having one glass, it's just ridiculous. Like, you just can't just have one glass. If you're going to have one, you may as well have more. And that's not a reflection on you as a person. It's not a reflection on you're morally weak, or you should just try harder, or you should just put more effort in to moderating and only having one. There is a physiological response to drinking alcohol for some people that is very, very different for others. So it's like if you're stung by a bee, for some people they get stung by a bee and they go, oh, that hurt. And for others, they get stung by a bee and they swell up. And for different people, they get stung by a bee and they need to be rushed into the hospital to get, you know, an EpiPen because they've had an anaphylactic reaction to being stung by a bee. So people respond differently to those things. And so, you know, responses to alcohol, it's similar. It's just physiologically different for some people. And so moderation just isn't a thing. For some. And that's, I just really want to stress that it's not a reflection on your character, not a reflection on your willpower. It's not a reflection on your motivation or your determination to try to keep drinking to within what people would say are normal limits. If you can't, it's just what it is for some people. It is an addictive substance, and it is okay to be addictive. You know, it's not okay to be addicted to it, but it's okay to understand that it's not a reflection on your character. Like, it's
right.
Not rocket science.
Yeah.
If you become addicted to an addictive substance.
Right, it's not, and I think that as you talked about, and we were talking about before we started recording and stuff, is that it is so normalized and so thought of as a normal thing to do and how we should be, it's normal. And I've noticed, like, I personally don't actually use the word normal drinking. I just think this person, their beverage of choice is alcohol, right?
Sure.
And where it's like, because I kind of view it as we're simply changing what it is we drink, right? Because
yes.
We still drink, we just don't choose to drink alcohol. And so...
Sorry.
That was, for me, that's what helped me, is that I'm changing what I drink. And so, I also think, so did you find that parts of that was also part of what kept you stuck longer? That, because even though you had, where you found there could have been cues if you had been looking for them all along your journey, But then when you realize, okay, this is something that I definitely need to do something about. But then you had the other side of like, okay, but what is my life going to be like? Yes. Am I going to be normal? Am I going to miss out on all the fun?
Absolutely. So there's two things there. One is your notion of not using the terminology of normal drinker, and I can really understand that. So I saw a sign recently when we were out at a park near a beach down at the Gold Coast, which is near where I live, and the sign said, no drinking in public, or something along those lines, or, you know, and it was clearly intended to mean no drinking alcohol. It was a sign that they were having a, you know, the Blues Fest in the park at Broad Beach. And so it was clearly meant to say you're not allowed to consume alcohol in public. But that's not what it said. It said no drinking. And so I get really frustrated by that. And it is part of that normalization where if you say I don't drink, that's ridiculous. Of course you drink. You drink water. You drink lots of other choices of beverage, as you say. So the notion of it being, you know, drink as synonymous with drinking alcohol is part of the problem that we have. Where it is so normalized. Okay, so the other part of your question was, I guess, around that fear factor of if I give up alcohol, will I still be able to be involved in all of these normal interactions with people in my life in the same way? And I always had this worry. I knew I was drinking too much, but I always had this worry about if I give up, what happens as I grow older? You know, I really could always picture myself sitting out on the deck, watching the sun go down, having a nice glass of wine and being at, you know, it was part of our lifestyle. So we would go out, you know, or we do, we go out motorbike riding and then we'll stop on the way back at a tavern or a bar or, you know, a nice place to have a drink. And often we'll do the crossroad at the time. But it was always about, oh, we'll stop and have a glass of wine, or we'll go down to the rock pools and we'll sit in the water and we'll take, you know, a bottle of wine with us and we'll have a wine while we sit in the, you know, in the waterfall. And so trying to imagine how all those things could happen without alcohol was what kept me drinking, you know, not consciously, I don't think, but the fear of how all of those things will take place without alcohol is definitely a scary fact that can keep you in that routine of just continuing to drink, because I've always had a drink when we do this, I've always had a drink when we do that, or something else. And, you know, another example was going to trivia night. So we'd go to trivia night and it would be, yep, have a glass of wine or two or three, depending on whether I had to drive. And if I had to drive, it was about those complex calculations again. How many glasses can I sneak in before I have to drive us home? And, you know, now if we go and play trivia, I'm so much better at it because I'm not clouding my mind with alcohol, right? So and I can go and I can have a nice drink that's not alcohol. It's not about what's in the glass, as you said. I still like the routine of having a nice glass. I drink my drinks in wine glasses, and I still have that routine of, you know, popping the cork off an alcohol-free bottle of bubbles of some description, and there are some really nice ones out there. So I still have that routine. I'm not missing out on that. We went out to a show last night with my family. We went to see the Friends parody. And when we got there, I went to the bar and I said, you know, can I have a tonic water and a ginger beer and some fresh wine in a wine glass, please? And it just didn't matter to me that what I had in my glass was an alcoholic. I ordered an alcoholic drink for my partner at the same time. And the difference that I find is that I then went and we sat in our seats and I watched the show. That's it. I watched the show and I sipped on that drink probably for, you know, three quarters of the show before it was gone. And I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, I need to get back to the bar. Is there going to be an intermission? I have to get back to the bar and make sure that I've got another glass of wine ready to go for the second half of the show. And I've been there before. I've been at shows where, you know, you get this intermission and, of course, you've got to run out and use the loo, but then it's like, oh, there's going to be a really long queue at the bar and I don't want to miss out on getting another glass of wine before I go back in. So the outing is clouded by this constant thinking about having enough to drink while you're there. Whereas last night, it just wasn't about that at all. I had a nice drink. It was in a lovely glass. It was great. And then I could just focus on the show and not have to worry about needing to go back and have another glass of wine or any of those things. So makes such a huge difference. So I think, you know, you're going to continue to see these references to alcohol in the media. You know, right. We have an ad on the TV at the moment that's for a place called Top Golf, where you can go and, you know, play golf with these big virtual screens and things like that. And I really noticed the other day that when they're advertising this venue, they're showing the four people who are there and they're all sitting down at the table, and there are two people with glasses of champagne and two people with glasses of or pots of beer. So it's really clear that they're trying to get this message across that, oh, you can drink when you come to our venue. You know, that's what part of it. Without actually saying it, they're making sure that that they're putting that out there. And I would never have noticed that a year ago before I stopped drinking. I would never have noticed the way references to alcohol are so prevalent in our society. So you're still always going to hear these things because it is so normalized. But the more time away you have from alcohol, the more you will actually be able to critically evaluate the meaning of the way alcohol is talked about or represented, and make a decision for yourself about whether or not you think that's appropriate and what that means for you. What I've been able to do now. I look at things where I'd never have noticed it, I now look and go, why are they even talking about alcohol there? Why are they even showcasing it? Like, it just has nothing to do with that event at all.
What I wanted to point out, though, is how bringing this up, too, can help others that are struggling, that they're not where we are right now, that they're mm-hmm. still in the struggle. They have some compassion for themselves and some understanding as far as why these fears are coming in for them. Right? Because their brain is totally taking in the whole normalcy of this, right? And how it's depicted in so much of life, but they're not actually noticing that much yet because they're not really questioning it, right? They're not doing that, like exploring or examining something that's being shown to them. So now I want to encourage them to like start paying attention to that, just so you can have like some awareness and it's not a you problem. Right.
Yes.
I'm being exposed to this. So, of course, my brain would be afraid that now I can't be normal like everyone else because of how much I'm exposed to it.
Absolutely. It's why they put, chocolates and lollies and things in the checkout at the supermarket. It's so that the children see the chocolates and the lollies and start nagging mum or dad to have that, because it's there in front of them. They're being exposed to it. So it's exactly that. And as adults with our young children, we can go, no, I'm not going to buy you a chocolate. It's not appropriate. We're on our way home to have dinner. So I think now it's time to start thinking about how you can care for yourself in the same way that you'd care for your children in making these kinds of decisions about, you know, what they eat or drink. And so just because you're exposed to it, you can actually stop and think, is this the right thing for me? To have, this glass of alcohol, whatever it is, or can I care for myself and make a decision that just because it's there, I don't need it. You know, I can have something else and still have a nice time. And I would say a better time, to be honest. And I had that fear. You know, I've got a couple of girlfriends that when we would get together, the whole point of getting together with them was obviously to have the conversations, but it was also to drink. It was, let's get some wine and let's have some drinks. And so, you know, it was always I'd go to dinner and I'd sleep over at their house, or they'd come to my house and they'd stay here. We always did it that way because, of course, there was always going to be this huge consumption of alcohol involved in that activity. And so there was fear for me with stopping drinking. How will I maintain these relationships with these people? And I'm still good friends with both of them. One drinks a lot more than the other, and I would really love for her to just try not drinking. One of the books that I read in the early days of stopping, an idea that really resonated for me was, we know what it's like to drink. We don't know what it's like to not drink.
Right.
So, yeah. Right, you know what it's like to go out and go to the party or go to your friend's place or go to the pub or whatever it is and have lots of drinks and, you know, probably the night turns out to be, you know, maybe a little bit messy, maybe you do some things that you're not very proud of, and then you wake up the next day and you're hungover and you're anxious and you can't really remember all the details of what you did. So you know what that's like. You've been doing that for however long, 20 years or 15 or 30, whatever it is, but you don't know yet what it's like to not drink. So just give that a go and see what happens. So for me, with this particular friend, not very long after I stopped drinking, I went to her house and I said to her, I'm not going to be drinking. She said, oh, you bring along your fake drink. And I've had a couple of people say that to me. And my response is, when I toss this drink in your face and it's dribbling down your chin, you tell me whether or not it's a fake drink. So I don't like the terminology.
Right, because that's like, it's still a drink, right?
It's still a drink.
It's still liquid in there.
It's liquid. So anyway, I went, she still had a few glasses of wine. I would suggest not as many as she would have had if I'd been drinking as well. And we had a fantastic night, like lots of big belly laughing conversations that I absolutely guarantee would not have taken place if we had both been in that normal mindset we had of, you know, I'm here to drink. And at the end of that night, I was able to go and get into my car and drive and pick my daughter up from work. She was finishing at about 10 o'clock at night, and come home, sleep in my own bed and get up the next morning and feel really good about the conversation that we'd had, and you know, that nothing had happened that I embarrassed myself or overshared information or any of those things that used to take place. And so this idea of, am I going to miss out? You know, I can understand the fear, and I can't think if I already said about my vision of growing older. I think I did. And so there was that fear, or, you know, what happens when or if my daughter gets married and everybody's drinking champagne at the wedding, what will happen then? And it's like, you know what? What will happen is we'll have some alcohol-free options, and I'll have some drink in a nice glass, and I'll share the toast like everybody else. The difference might be that I'll be able to drive home at the end of the night and remember it. I'll be able to, whatever that function is, whether it's her or you know, her wedding or my son's graduation or whatever it might be, I will be able to remember the details of that event in a way that I wouldn't have been in the past. And so I'll be really properly present for those things. And that's something to actually look forward to, not to fear missing out on having a certain liquid in the glass.
Well, yeah, because me, when my daughter got married, I was still actively drinking. I remember nothing.
Yeah. And that's so such a shame, like, isn't it?
It's literally, like, I remember the ceremony because it hadn't been that many yet. So I remember the ceremony part. And when she said, I do, but the rest of it, literally, not one thing. And I personally was not even in any wedding pictures, and I was the mother of the bride.
Wow.
Probably because they couldn't find me, or I couldn't stand up. Who knows what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, but I can't, but I'll, again, also on that, that's not to say, like, I also can't go back. I don't have a time machine, but I can go back and change it. So I don't beat myself up over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it is, but to the point of what you were saying about how it'd be a lovely experience and you will remember everything. That's really what you want more than you want whatever that liquid is in your glass.
Definitely.
If you really like to tell yourself the truth around the situation. And if, but yes, as you're stating, it's also normal, yes, to have the fears, and it's okay to have the fear and go ahead with what you know is going to be what you'd rather have anyway.
Yeah.
Right. And so that. Are you tired of going along to get along? Have you noticed yourself struggling to change your relationship with alcohol, making a plan not to drink, and then finding yourself going along with everyone else and against what you really, truly, deeply want for yourself and your life? Then I've got you covered. Exit and Beyond members are transforming their relationship with alcohol one belief at a time. Experiencing the fear of following through with their desires and doing it anyway. Learning to trust themselves to figure out their own unique relationship with alcohol while enjoying the journey. Inside Exit and Beyond Virtual Life Coaching Membership,
you'll experience the gift of grace and compassion, as well as the coaching you need to hold yourself accountable so you can follow through even when it feels scary. The video training allows you to learn at your own pace, and the coaching helps you follow through. If you're ready to take what you're learning here on the podcast to the next level, then head over to jumpseatcoaching.com/exit.
I try not to beat myself up about things that have happened in the past, because I can't change those things. I can only change moving forward. But if I had a time machine and I could go back in time, I would say stop drinking sooner. So if you've got people who are still considering, can I do this or can I not do this? My advice is just try it. Just try it, because you just don't know what's waiting for you on the other side of giving up. And once you've given up, you won't, to my mind anyway, you won't want to go back. And so the sooner you start that journey, the sooner you can have those experiences that are not clouded by alcohol, and have those experiences where you don't have to think, you know, like your daughter's wedding, oh, I really can't remember it. I can't go back in time and change it. But if you'd made the decision to stop drinking just before then, what a different experience you would have had. So I know that there will be people who will be thinking, I can't give up alcohol right now. I've got so-and-so's 40th coming up. I've got so-and-so's wedding coming up. I've got such and such event coming up. So I can't quit alcohol just now. I'm going on holidays, you know, potentially, a bit different now with COVID. But, you know, and so there'll be all these reasons that people would give themselves for not quitting quite yet, or not even not quitting. Don't even think about it in terms of that long-term goal, but just stopping for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days to begin with. Oh, I can't, because in the 90 days I've got these three events. My thing would be, now give it a go in those 90 days, because you will experience those events in a way that you wouldn't if you're drinking at them. They will be an entirely different experience, and to my mind will be a much better and more rewarding experience if you don't add alcohol.
Because what I like about what you said, you've already experienced a bunch of those events with the alcohol.
Yes.
What if you just decided, I'm going to experiment with this event without it? It's not like you have to make a big announcement to everyone. I gave up alcohol. All you're doing is, I'm going to experiment with a few events and go without alcohol and see what happens. Let me just find out. Let me get curious. And let me explore it and find out. And I think a part of that that also keeps people stuck is, oh, I have to make this forever decision kind of thing. Yeah. And we don't really have to make a forever decision. But so you've shared a lot around what your story was and then changes now. But because you had a lot of beliefs and now you have different beliefs. What helped you get to that space? What helped you get to where you now have a year or almost a year that you have
over a year. Yeah. Over a year. Yeah. And so one thing I would say is I actually can't tell you right now the exact number of days. Within the early days, I would have been able to tell you exactly what day I was on, how many days alcohol free. Whereas as time goes on, it becomes less important. So it just keeps getting easier and easier. So the things that helped me, the first thing in the first week, I very much did the first week by myself. I didn't really, it wasn't a planned thing to stop drinking. So it was a very spontaneous decision. So I didn't have anything in place. I hadn't really thought about how can I help myself get through this initial difficult, early stages. And I won't sugarcoat it and say, oh, it's all really easy. You just stop and it's fine. You stop thinking about alcohol, because you definitely don't. So in that first week, one thing that, will sound really silly, I'm sure, but one thing that really helped me was I just kept saying to myself, whatever day I was on, so let's say on day two, have to do day two so I can get to day 20. I have to do day three so I can get to day 30. So that was my way of just framing it for myself, that I was just taking one day at a time and just getting through each day. So in that first week, honestly, it was just sheer determination, I think. And I did replace the drink, I still would have a drink every afternoon at 5 or just after I walked the dog or while I was making dinner. I just would drink, you know, tonic water or something like that to begin with. And after the first week, I had been hovering around the edges of should I join a program or not. And I decided that it was going to be worth it to do that. And so I did join a particular program where there are three sections. Comes in 30 days, 60 days, and then 90 days. And so on each day, a new idea is unlocked for you. And so there's something every day to just give you some ideas about, you know, replacement activities. So how can you reward yourself in different ways? What are the things you can do that, you know, might help you celebrate an event that doesn't involve alcohol? What are some things you can do? So if your routine has been that you go to the pub and have a beer with your mates, what can you do instead of that? And so this program unlocked all of those different kinds of ideas. But the main thing that helped me were the podcasts and the coaching calls within that program. So as I said, you know, walking the dog is very much part of my routine. And so every afternoon, you know, at the time it was just coming into spring here in Australia. And so sort of 5:30 around that time when I would be, you know, pouring that first glass of wine for the evening, I'd pop on my headphones and take the dog for a walk and listen to a podcast or a coaching call. And so hearing stories about other people, so people who'd been where I had been, and I would find myself nodding. You know, somebody would talk about the calculations, you know, doing the mental maths about how many drinks can I have and still be able to drive and those sorts of things. And I would hear that and feel myself nodding along, or, I, you know, this happened when I fell down the steps, and I'd be, oh, yeah, I remember when that happened to me. And so I could really relate to the stories these people were telling. And then I would listen to the way their story would shift from their drinking experiences to the changes they made and the ways they did that. And so just hearing that people had come out the other side and that they were enjoying life and feeling healthier and more engaged and more productive and just generally feeling a greater sense of well-being after stopping drinking. And they weren't missing out. They were still going to functions and parties and events and things like that. So hearing these stories, and some of them were the coaching calls that were, you know, specific techniques. Okay, you're going on a holiday. Previously you would always be drinking on a holiday. So what do you do so that when you're on holiday you don't want to go and buy a drink? So here are some ideas to do that. So those were really, really important for me. And it was, you know, it was almost daily that I would listen to either a podcast or a coaching call, either while I was walking my dog or as I was driving into work once we started to get back into the office. And the other thing I did, I read a lot. I've always had a book in hand ever since I was fairly young, lots and lots of the quit literature. So a whole range of books. And I would just read them back to back to back to back to back. Around the 3-month mark, I thought, okay, I'm good. I'm going to read a normal book now. I'm going to read, you know, just a fictional novel. And I started to read it for a couple of nights. And I thought, you know what, I'm actually not quite ready yet. I still need to be in this space of sharing my experience with other people by reading their stories and being able to relate to their stories and knowing that they've come through and have more fulfilling, I won't say better lives because that sounds quite judgmental, I think, but more fulfilling experiences is what they're having on the other side of stopping drinking. And so those were the two really big things for me. The other thing was probably experimenting with lots of different drinks, so lots of different mocktails. And, you know, there was one that I would make that had, you know, you'd stew up some blueberries and then crush them and strain them and then add cranberry juice. And it was a really lovely, you know, kind of a thick drink, if you like. So it had some volume to it, which for me reminded me of a red wine, but didn't taste like red wine at all. But, you know, so for a little while here, we had this constant, you know, blueberries stewing away in the kitchen. And another one was a pineapple drink. So, you know, some chunks of pineapple and some coconut cream and things like that. And so every time I went shopping, I would be buying these tins of pineapple. And people were thinking, my goodness, that's such a lot of pineapple. But for me at the time, it was important. It was a nice drink. It was something I could look forward to. I could pour it into a wine glass and I could still have that routine of those drinks. I don't do that so much anymore. I found a couple of nice alcohol-free or de-alcoholized wines that I really enjoy. And I tend to just drink those. But I will say that the difference is when I was drinking wine, you know, I would sit down and pour my drink. And as soon as it was finished, I would go to the kitchen and pour another. And as soon as that was finished, I would go to the kitchen and pour another. And that would go on throughout the evening until I either fell asleep on the couch, which was fairly routine, or I went to bed. Now I can pour a nice alcohol-free bubbles or a sparkling Shiraz and I drink it and then I just sit and I keep watching the program or reading my book or whatever it is. And then occasionally I'll go and have another one, maybe three, but sometimes I just have one. And then when it's time to actually hop up and turn off the lights and go to bed, I go, oh, I didn't go back for another glass. So it's this difference between being constantly wanting to go and top the drink up and constantly aware of the drink to just, oh, that was a nice drink, but I don't need to rush back to the kitchen and get myself another one. You know, it's just such a different mindset. And the difference it makes in the morning, not being hungover, I just can't explain it. And the other thing for me, there's, you know, physical differences. So at one point I was really finding that, you know, my hair was really thinning or my skin was really bad or I was having some really some digestive issues that were quite, you know, impacting my well-being. And all through that time I was trying to find different vitamins. You know, I'll take the hair, skin and nails vitamin, or I'll take the evening primrose oil, or I'll take this vitamin. And I was having all these vitamins to try to counteract these physical experiences I was having. And I knew at the time, of course, that drinking all the alcohol wouldn't have been helping, but I wasn't prepared to admit that to myself. And right. So since stopping drinking, you know, my hair is thicker again, my eyes are clear, my skin is much better, my digestive issues, I still have to be careful with what I eat, but they've settled down a lot. So my physical well-being, I feel better in myself. And I think I said earlier, my productivity has just skyrocketed because I just have so much more energy now to get things done. So there's been those physical impacts as well. And I'm sure many of your guests would say this, but I just cannot stress how nice it is to wake up every morning and not be hungover. It's the best feeling. And not wake up at 3 o'clock every morning.
Right.
I don't know about you.
3 o'clock in the morning. There's actually science behind that because what's happening is your body is shooting off this chemical called dynorphin to offset what you're doing with the alcohol. Yeah. And the dynorphin literally lasts in the body longer than the alcohol. And it's kind of an energizer. And so when the alcohol part is wearing off, the dynorphin is still in there. And that's why you wake up. And it's not unusual for everyone to say it was the 3 o'clock in the morning thing. And it has to do with that dynorphin stuff coming into the body. And but what I also found fascinating is the different things that you noticed that were probably highly unexpected, like tying the alcohol to the hair or even the appearance of our skin isn't something that we would think of until it's actually gone. Now, the more it kind of seems logical to have more clarity and not be hungover in the morning, right? Because those are the things that you notice the most. Was there anything else that happened that was very, very surprising to you that it was literally you believe because you stopped the alcohol?
I think just handling things in general. I can tend to be a little bit of a volatile personality, you could say. And so I'm not going to say that giving up alcohol is a miracle cure to not having any upset or any conflict. But it definitely allows you to handle things better. You know, there have been lots of times where I've known that my responses to things happening here in the house or with family would have been extreme responses if I was drinking. And at the time, as I said, I wouldn't have really tied it to that. I wouldn't have said, oh, it's because of this that I respond in this way. I just would have said, oh, it's because of the situation that I'm responding in that way. Whereas I really now can look and go, yeah, it was definitely the alcohol. So just a lot more peaceful, a lot more rest, you know, sleeping better, sleeping through the night, not having to get up in the night or lie awake at 3 o'clock with the pounding headache and the torment of thinking, oh, I've done it again. You know, why do I keep doing this? I won't drink tonight. I won't have anything to drink tonight. And then, of course, 5 o'clock rolls around and you do. And so just that overall sense of being able to be the best version of myself that I can be. I didn't realize how much alcohol was holding me back from achieving the things I want to achieve and having the relationships I want to have. It was impacting me in ways that I didn't understand. So the physical well-being, the mental well-being, the anxiety that I thought was just me. It wasn't me. It was me with alcohol added. And the alcohol was being added in such huge volumes at such regular intervals that it was very difficult to tell what was real me and what was alcohol-induced responses, even when I wasn't actually drunk at the time. So it was that, you know, and I've read some of the science as well that it takes the full 10 days for alcohol to actually properly leave your system. So even if you're doing the 2 alcohol-free days a week that are recommended, and I have to say I never did that, at least in the later years, if you're doing that, you're still not getting the benefit. You're not getting the benefit until 10 days in, when you can then start to get this better mental clarity and better physical well-being. It's actually astounding how much alcohol impacts you. And I see now some of my friends who do still drink, and one friend in particular, who will comment about how busy she is at work and how she has to work weekends and to keep up and things like that. And it's not for me to say to her, you should stop drinking. But I wish that she would try it, because if she tried it, I think she would find that she would just be so much more productive at work that she wouldn't need to work weekends, because she would just get through it, like, you know, in a way that you don't understand. You're in that brain fog of alcohol, whether, you know, the night before or 2 nights before, it just is impacting you so much, and you don't know it unless you can step back from it and then reflect on the changes. And that will definitely come.
Yeah, it's that ripple effect that you don't realize the night of the drinking is having like a 10-day ripple effect, not just the hangover ripple effect.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so then when you're not having it, you're having a huge, tremendous ripple effect from, first of all, how present and aware you actually are all of the time, how much more mindful that you can be. And then you're not in that recovery state, so you're way more productive.
Yes.
But yet, just like as you said, it's not really your place. And this isn't all about like nobody should drink and we all have the right way. No, that's not it. It's really for those that are realizing, okay, this is what I don't want to keep doing, and I need to hear that it's possible. And other people were probably just where I was, or maybe even worse than I am. And if they can do it, I can do it too.
And absolutely. And I would say that quite honestly, if I can do it, you can too. Because I didn't think I could. I didn't think I could do my life without alcohol in it. It was such a big part of everything I did. And it was a scary thing to consider not doing it. And so I think that's while I think deep down I knew I was quitting for good, I never really confronted that until around day 16 or 20, somewhere around there. I remember I went to the uni bar at work, and with this friend that I've mentioned to, who is quite a big drinker, and when I got to the bar and I ordered, tonic water and lime, she kind of looked at me and I said, I'll never drink again. And that was pretty early on. That was like day 16 or day 20. And so even though I wasn't properly confronting it yet, I did know it, that it was going to be it was going to be a forever decision for me because I just felt so good. And that was even that early on. But I do also remember around the same time we went for a little barbecue over the road with some neighbours. And I'd taken a few alcohol-free drinks and then we ran out of them. And it was a really awkward situation where the host then came out and was saying to me, oh, I can bring you something else. Would you like a champagne? Would you like a wine? Would you like a brandy? And she was offering me all these drinks. And it was really, really awkward to say, oh, no, I'm good, I'm fine, thanks. Do you just have some tonic water? And she kind of looked at me. And Steve at the time ended up having a glass of wine on that occasion. And which was a little bit upsetting for me. And you know, generally, really early on, Steve is my partner, and he was really good about not drinking if I was not drinking up until I got to about day 100. And then I said to him, I'm actually really good now. I'm really happy for you to have a drink. If you want one, it doesn't bother me. But this was only on about day 22, so it was still pretty early days. So the fact that that I'm here struggling, saying no to the host, going, no, I don't want it, I'm good. And then he ended up having a glass of wine. I was like, oh, that doesn't seem quite right. Anyway, afterwards we came away from that event and we went, okay, how could we have done that differently so that it didn't create any stress? And we came to, you know, I could have just said, oh, I'd really love a cup of coffee, if you don't mind. And so I think always having a strategy. So if you're going to social events where previously you would have been drinking, have a strategy. Bring your own drinks. Ask for a coffee. Ask for a cup of tea. Ask for an ice water, whatever it is. But know ahead of time how you're going to respond to those questions about would you like a drink. And if these people didn't know me at all, but if it's people who know you, you know, have in mind, oh, I'm just doing a 30-day health kick. I'm not drinking today. You know, don't feel like you need to explain your decision to everybody right up front, because you definitely don't. And the one final thing that I'll say that I found really interesting at the time, when I got to day 300, Steve was away. And so he sent me this, I'd mentioned to him that it was going to be day 300. And he sent me this lovely message and broke it down into, you know, minutes or hours, whatever it was, and really was like, wow, 300 days, that's so amazing. Good on you. And I thought, isn't it interesting, though, that day 300 is so much easier than day 3. I needed that celebration on day 3. I need somebody on day 3 going, wow, you've done 3 days, that's amazing. You've done 4 days, good on you. You've done 7 days, fantastic. Because day 3, day 7, day 12, day 20, those days are harder than day 300 or day 365 or day 400 or whatever it is. It just gets easier and easier. So if you've got people on side who can celebrate with you each day early on, then do that, because, you know, that recognition of the achievement of every single day of not drinking early on is really, really important.
Yes, and I agree with you, and I love that idea. And I think you just gave me an idea to start incorporating into my stuff that I'm doing. Well, because I'm working towards doing something regular on Clubhouse, like the app, the social media app Clubhouse. Yeah. And so what I wanted to do was like Sunday wins, like a Sunday yeah. win room. So where yeah. people could, even if their win was, I've gone 5 hours. Like yeah, for some absolutely. People, that's a win. And yeah. so it was literally like doing a room around Sunday wins. And then yeah. also kind of trying to do like one on Fridays for like setting yourself up for success for the weekend.
Yeah,
right. Because that's where people find the most struggle. And so
sure.
that, so as you're saying that, I'm like, oh yes, I definitely have to do Sunday wins then or something like yeah. that. Like,
in and I think stuff. The other thing there is on the weekends to plan activities that don't need alcohol. So go, you know, depending on where you are in the world, I suppose. But for me, it would be go paddle boarding, go and walk the dog on the beach. You know, we'll go for a motorbike ride, but we'll go for a ride down and then have a swim and then come home again and not make it about stopping off and having a drink. Or go earlier. So instead of going for a bike ride in the afternoon and then having a wine, we go in the morning and we go for a coffee. And so that's one thing I have to say. I don't limit my coffees. I figure if I'm not I'm not having alcohol, I'm going to have coffee. So I do buy coffees. And in Australia, I don't know what America's like, but in Australia, the coffee industry is huge. And so we will do that. But we changed slightly how we do things. We didn't give it up. We didn't give up the motorbike riding that we do together. But we do it at a different time of day where, and particularly early on, that was important, where it doesn't have to revolve around, oh, it's 4 o'clock, it's wine o'clock, let's have a wine. And now it doesn't matter because I'm a year in and you know, we can go in the afternoon and I'll just have a nice tonic water and ginger beer or whatever it might be. But be prepared for that early on. So make plans to do things. Go bushwalking, for example, because that's not something where you'd bring your beer usually.
Well, it depends. But yeah, some people would, but it's like, yeah, but no, but I love that idea and that strategy of doing things and planning things for planning the thing for the event itself instead of planning the thing for the drinks that are going to be at the event.
Yeah, absolutely.
So reframing kind of how you're planning the thing and what you're planning and planning for the experience instead of planning for the beverages.
I think
that'll really make a huge difference. And I know that your story has been, I know it will help a lot of people that are going to listen. And I truly, truly appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, and especially getting up at the hour you had to get up to be at the hour to help to come and do this. And I am so grateful that you came on and shared your story with us. It was absolutely beautiful.
And it's been wonderful talking with you. I've appreciated the opportunity to talk with you. And you know, hopefully it will help some of your members. So thank you. It's been a delight.
All right. Thank you so, so much. Thank you so much for listening to Exit the Drinking Life podcast. I hope this episode has helped you move away from drinking shame and blame and instead into confidence and full belief that the life you desire is within your reach. You are not alone. I have been exactly where you are right now. If you have enjoyed this episode, please take a second to hit the follow button so you never miss a future episode. And leave a review to help me reach more listeners just like you, looking to break away from the toxic cycle of drinking and discover a healthier approach that leads to a life full of abundance and happiness. If you want to take what you've learned here to the next level, head over to jumpseatcoaching.com for more resources and tools. See you back here on the next episode.